Now, our next speaker from Al-Anon is Adina G. Adina, are you there?
I am.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Kim, for your service. Thanks to the great Saturday meeting for sponsoring tonight. There's such great recovery at that meeting. Thanks, Michael, also for your service. I really appreciate that you also talked about hope. I think it's timely now. And I want to start with a wonderful quote from Anne L., who's in a sister program. And she, her relationship with God ended up being a huge inspiration to my relationship with God. And she says, she said, never, ever give up hope because God is such a show off. And I have always been a hopeful person. And I believe that is part of my temperament because I certainly didn't grow up in a family that would have inspired me to have hope. So I would say if nothing else, and when I had nothing else, I have always been eternally hopeful. And today I recognize that that hope was primarily what kept me from killing myself as a child. When I was a child, my hope was based on a fantasy of the life that I wanted for myself. And so there were very juvenile aspects to this sense of hope. The things I hoped for as a child were things like that somebody would confirm that my parents were crazy, that someone would punish my parents, that my family would see me as I saw myself, that I would have a better past, that someone would love me enough to change, and that someone would save me. So you get the gist of how hope worked for me as a kid. But it kept me alive. And I really didn't begin to have a more mature sense of hope until I came into recovery. There was a woman at today's meeting who shared, and she talked about, I think it's in the closing where it says, you may not like all of us, but you love us in the same way we already love you. And I realized that I need to put my timer on so I can manage myself. And she talked about how she didn't love herself when she came into the program. And that was me. And that you people loved me until I could love myself. And also, you showed me how to love myself. And if that's not what what hope is, I don't know what it is. I got my tissues here, and I'm already starting to have a boo-hoo. So game on in the crying department here. The other thing I wanted to share was something which we used to call the promises, and we don't anymore because the World Service Organization put the kibosh on that. They decided it wasn't a good idea for us to make promises. So now we refer to this passage or these passages as From Survival to Recovery, pages 269 to 270. But when I first started going to Al-Anon, these were read at my meetings. So as a newcomer, this is what I heard. If we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a great capacity for joy, wonder, and fulfillment. We will discover that we are both worthy of love and loving. All right, I got to take a breath.
Woo. It's okay. It's okay. Take your time. It's okay.
Whoa. We will love others without losing ourselves, and we will learn to accept love in return. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. We will begin to feel and will come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. As we gain the ability to forgive ourselves, our families, and our world, our choices will expand. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of those we love to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. No longer terrified, we will discover that we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. Fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So I think that was the beginning of a different kind of hope for myself. And I want to talk about the 12 steps because it's another place where I found incredible hope. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. For me, it was the hope of humility. I had no humility when I came in to Al-Anon. I powered through everything. The idea that I was powerless or that my life was unmanageable was completely foreign. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The hope for me was I was no longer alone. That powering through the I have to do this myself. I can do it. Or if I can't, I'm going to lie about it so that you think I can. But the hope was that there was something of comfort to me and that I was no longer alone. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. The hope for me in that step is surrender. Is that I'm no longer alone as in step two, and I can surrender to the comfort that I found in step two. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Well, the hope that comes from getting honest about who I am. And that was a big growing up for me. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That meant for me getting past fear and shame to say who I am. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. For me, the hope was in willingness, willing to let go of what I had held on to, clutched my whole life. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. For me, that was hope that was in prayer, which I had never done before. I grew up in a religious tradition where my family often went to religious services, but I never heard anybody talk about a personal relationship with a God of their understanding. So it didn't happen in my family and it didn't really happen in a house of worship. So that was new for me, was to pray in a very personal way. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Stop justifying my bad behavior. I found a lot of hope in just stopping and learning how to look for my part, which I had been unwilling to do, whether everything was your fault or everything was my fault. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I found a lot of hope in taking responsibility for myself, which is not something that I was big on, because I spent all my time justifying my bad behavior. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I found a lot of hope in becoming trustworthy to myself and to others. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And that was about, for me, the hope that came out of getting into communion with God, which for me is listening to and answering God's call. And finally, 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And for me, I found hope in devotion, which is what step 12 means to me. My devotion to myself, my devotion to my higher power, and my devotion to fellowship and to service. The other thing that has become helpful, so I have a couple of years in. I love, somebody once said that we'll keep ourselves the right size if we give ourselves 1 minute for every year we've been in recovery. So when I say I've been in recovery 15 minutes, I'm reminded that 15 minutes is actually a pretty short amount of time. It's not too long. And I am growing and changing. And one of the ways that I find hope is when I see myself as I am, not as I was. And so there was a big moment, maybe a year ago, when I thought about how I was continuing to bring with me how I saw myself, and I've always seen myself, even though many of those ways that I saw myself were no longer true, and that was holding me back from seeing myself as I am, not as I was. So I had to let go of some of these ways that were no longer true, because it was also interfering with me becoming who I am. So I started becoming able to say, I no longer, and fill in the blank. It's I no longer do this, or I no longer am a person who. And I found that was a really profound part of having hope around seeing how much progress that I've made. And that it doesn't mean that even though I'm no longer a person who habitually lies to myself, even if I discover a circumstance where I have lied to myself, I just have repeated an old mistake, but it doesn't now make me, I haven't turned back into that person who habitually lies to myself. So it was a letting go of seeing myself as I was. So I would suggest that practice if there are ways where you think that you are still seeing yourself as the person you were, but not as the person you are, that's a part of the inventory. You know, what do you no longer do? And how are you no longer the person that you used to be? And to really own that. I think it's a way that we let go of our past. And I heard something when I first came into program that I love, which is look but don't stare at our past. And the only reason we look at our past is to let go of it. And I do have to say that I still say to myself, look but don't stare, when I catch myself staring. And now I say, I'm looking at my past to see how far I've come. I've let go of so much of my past that now the hope for me is I can use that as a measurement of how far I've come. And so I wanted to tell you a little bit about how far I have come. I grew up in a family with alcoholism. My dad was an alcoholic and he died a few years ago. And it was one of those families that I often hear other people talking about, which is the other person, particularly the partner, spouse of an alcoholic, looks much, much crazier than the alcoholic. And that was absolutely my experience. And my relationship with my mom, who is not an alcoholic, was has been difficult for a long, long time. And I had my second to last sponsor when we were talking about, I found myself so angry with my mom in a way that I had not been angry with her for many, many years. And I was just, I really was at wit's end. I was so unhappy with myself, unhappy with my impatience, my criticism of her. I mean, I was miserable. And so I said to her, you know, I just got to forgive my mom. I got to forgive my mom. I think that's what's, you know, what's making me crazy. I have some more forgiveness to do, but I'm really struggling with it. And she said something which set in motion just very big series of things. So she said, I don't think everything is forgivable. And I had never heard that in Al-Anon before, because of course we have so much literature and so much of the time we're talking about, you know, forgiveness is the gateway drug to freedom. And she said, I don't think everything is forgivable, but I don't think it's, and I don't think it's the only way to get free. And she talked about acceptance. And she illuminated that by talking about her parents, and that accepting what was true, both in terms of what happened to her and the truth of the relationships, was the way that she found freedom. And I really was thinking a lot about that. And during that course of time, I started working with a different sponsor, my current sponsor. And I remember in one of the first, if not the first time we got together, I talked to her about how angry I was, and that my mom was turning 85 this year. And really the thing that I said was, I cannot have her die with me being this angry at her. I just don't want that. I don't want her to die with me being this angry. So I have to figure something out here. And we started working. And one of the things I love about Al-Anon is that when things look a certain way, by the time I've worked them out, they often can look a different way and in a very surprising way. So I started working on this But it wasn't like, you know, we got together and every day I said, okay, now we're going to work on my mom again. We're going to talk about my mom. But what I eventually got to were two things about my family that led to how I saw myself in the world and that really were game changers for me. So one of the things I got to was that because it seemed like it was so hard for my family to take care of me, I came to understand that I must be a difficult person to love. And it was excruciatingly painful to understand that that's what I thought about myself. But of course, as soon as I said it and started talking about it with my sponsor, I realized that it wasn't true. And I am under no illusion. I understand that I can be a handful, but I am actually not a difficult person to love. The other thing that I understood at about the same time was that because my family was so suspicious of other people's motives, and at the same time were so untrustworthy themselves, that I never learned to trust myself. And the truth is, I can trust myself. And most importantly, I can trust myself to take care of myself. And those two things, and I can't explain why, because this is God showing off. There's no other explanation that this is just God showing off in my life, is those two things, my understanding that I was a difficult person to love, that somehow that's what I reasoned out with my child's mind, and also that I never learned how to trust myself, those two things ended up setting me free of my past in just a profound and deep way. The image of I have is a glacier in Alaska. I think it's called calving, when a giant chunk falls off the glacier, disengages, and lands in the water, and the reverberations are just, you know, sort of tsunami-ish. And that's what it was like for me. And that is how I let go of my anger toward my mom. And I don't know how they're connected, because that's how Al-Anon works. For me, there's just a lot of mystery. I don't know how they're connected, and I don't have to know. I just know that they were, and that that's how I ended up getting free. And I got free to the extent that I can say that my past feels like it's finally in my rearview mirror. And I am free to live my life fully in the present and to look toward the future. Not live there, but look toward the future. And I still check my rearview mirror when there's something that I need to look at, but I no longer feel like I'm stuck and tethered to my past in a way that I was. So for me, this is the hope, is that I got a lot of relief when I first came into Al-Anon, and I got a lot of freedom. And yet all these years later, I'm still getting relief and I'm still getting freedom. And so I can have hope that I still have more. And around this time that my past receded, I really started thinking about happiness, and that I've never considered myself a particularly happy person. I mean, I thought of happy people as sort of like perky and chipper, and I was not down with that. It was like, come on. I mean, chipper people, I just think they're lying. You know, they're lying to me, they're lying to themselves. You know, what's going on here? So I had this whole judgment and this idea about what it meant to be happy. And I have not turned into a, a perky person or a chipper person, but I have an understanding of happiness that I didn't have before. And that part of this deep letting go of the past has allowed me to step into a sense of happiness that seemed to elude me during my life. And so for that, I'm just incredibly grateful. So here's what I hope for now. To know God's will for me, to be of service wherever I can, the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, pride from having the courage to change the things I can, humility, honesty, and willingness. And those are the things I hope for now. And I want to talk a little bit about this time that we're in, because while I am, as I described, a generally hopeful person, and I have, through meetings, close contact with my sponsor, reading literature, have overall been thriving, I would say, during this pandemic, I'm not okay every day. There are days where I feel unwell spiritually, emotionally, mentally. And I think we're facing a medical crisis and we're facing a moral crisis in the greater community that I belong to. I mean, my work in Al-Anon has led me to my humanity in a way that I was very separate from my humanity when I was sick. Before recovery, the disease kept me isolated, separate. I was different than anybody else. And it has allowed me to get into the boat of humanity. But this is a difficult time for me to be in that boat. And honestly, sometimes the boat feels like a cesspool. And I have pretty hard days. I want to be careful with this because in Al-Anon, we talk a lot about keeping outside issues outside Al-Anon. And so I look to the traditions and the steps and the concepts for guidance. Are Al-Anon principles embodied in the steps, traditions, and concepts? I do understand that they're not meant to be walls to insulate me from the problems of the world, but they're boundaries meant to allow me to address outside issues without becoming self-destructive or destructive to others. So what's been helpful at the group level in terms of addressing this for me is principles above personalities. So I don't share at the group level about individual officials or politics or leadership. I try and stick with personal principles. I also think about the damage that silence and lies and secrets have, how they've impacted me with a family disease. And so it's a balance for me, like most everything. In my recovery, tradition one tells us our common welfare should come first. We stay away from topics that are divisive. Tradition three states the relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. So I leave my outside affiliations at the door. Tradition five says each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. So I keep my focus on how I am personally affected, even if it's by an outside issue. Tradition 10 reminds us that the Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues. That doesn't mean that I can't have a personal opinion. But again, for me, the spirit of it is to prevent controversy and divisiveness that will interfere with our primary purpose. But I can share about how I am affected. And so what I want to say about that in terms of showing up and being, telling the truth and being honest with you and when I'm at a meeting is long, long before I understood anything about the family disease or that my family was affected by it. I had a very, very clear, as a child, understanding of racism, crystal clear, both in and outside of my family. And that broke my heart. And it has broken my heart every day since. And I look to the steps 4, 10, and 12, a searching and fearless moral inventory and continuing to take personal inventory in all our affairs. The steps can guide me to my part, to showing up for my part. Step 8 allows me to acknowledge harm. You know, when I hear the word reparations, and when I am called from someone else in the community to acknowledge my part in harm and acknowledging a larger harm, again, you know, the Al-Anon teaches me, stop taking things personally. The courage of a fearless and moral inventory. I got that. I know how to do that. And there's no reason that I can't apply all of that that I understand about myself to greater issues in my life that aren't about the disease of alcoholism, but about other kinds of diseases that affect me and the community that I care about. So when I hear the word reparations, for example, and the fear that brings up, Al-Anon teaches me how to have courage in the face. What do we say? We say courage is fear that said its prayers. When I hear the word reparations, what I hear is amends. I know how to do step 9. I've done that. And I know how to make amends. And I know how to find my part. And so there's so many ways that the principles and tools of this program can guide me through navigating outside issues, both in terms of the choices I make about sharing at the group level to honor the principles and tools of the program, but they can guide me in my life. So they guide me both within and without the fellowship. And I'm incredibly grateful for those tools. And honestly, I have no idea what my life would be like during a pandemic without you. And I want to thank all of you for being here tonight, showing up meeting after meeting with your experience, strength, and hope, and for teaching me how to grow up, how to let go of my past, grow into the person that I have always been meant to be. And I think I'll close there, other than I want to say, because I need to hear it myself, how I started, which is never, ever give up hope, because God is such a show off. Thanks.